Battleground, read by the author. Brigadier Joseph Hardy was exactly the sort of man the army wanted him to be. He was polished, polite and precise. He was serious, sensible and solicitous. What he lacked in intelligence, he did not make up for in humour. The war had been a godsend to Brigadier Hardy, who had been shuffled sideways in the military hierarchy because he lacked the imagination and spontaneity to rise any higher. The army did not encourage imagination and spontaneity, of course, but someone as dull as Hardy stood out more and more as the ranks progressed. He'd started straight from Oxford as a captain, because it was either the army or the church. Being the third son of an entitled British family was always an awkward, unloved position. The problem was that having started high, he was reluctantly pushed higher because there was nowhere else for him to go when his current position had tired of him. Brigadier was the perfect rank, the sideways shuffle to paperwork and retirement, the rank that said, "This is as high as you will ever go and you'd better accept it gracefully," the rank that afforded a good pension to those who could stick it out for the duration of their service, the rank that said, "Keep your head down, take the salutes, put the paperwork in the correct trays, watch the parades, and don't make a fuss." And then, of course, the war. Now Brigadier Hardy was the biggest cock in the coop. He couldn't believe his luck. It was all he could do not to crow at the importance of his position. He may have only been giving orders that had come straight down from the War Cabinet, but he made them sound like his idea, and his idea alone. The ops room girls with the lacquered rolls of neat hair and the tight khaki skirts shuffled the positions of the battle lines with long sticks across the giant table map, their shapely legs lifting flirtatiously. The young men with the glasses and the wheezing, unfit for active duty, who were assigned to paperwork alongside him, rushed around with a sense of urgency, and he made that happen. He could order any one of these people to bring him a cup of tea any time he wanted. The point of his role every day was to try and move his coloured symbols across the board in the right direction, and not to allow the evil enemy coloured blocks to get any closer. He was capable and competitive. He was ruthless genius at this game. He lacked even an ounce of compassion, which enabled him to simply tut when a WAF had fainted at reports that her brother's regiment had been wiped out. He signalled another girl to move the corresponding pieces on the board, and two of the wheezing young men to carry the hopeless unconscious girl out of his way. Brigadier Hardy was a stupid man. To learn more about his life, let's meet his wife. Betty Hardy was an uptight woman, whose age will not be revealed for the purpose of politeness. She'd aged well, mostly because she did as little physical drudgery as possible. She'd considered that she'd married well enough. The third son was never the greatest catch. But her husband had been a healthy-looking man, who had also aged well, his rather large stomach notwithstanding. Betty had sized him up much the same way as she would a good horse, and he'd been found adequate. The marriage had been suitable for both of them. She had enough money from him to dedicate her time to her horses, and he had enough respect from her to make him feel like a proper man. She organised the staff and the house like a military project, and if their roles had been reversed, then it's with utmost certainty that she would have exceeded his rank. Betty was not a warm, approachable woman. She was a tight-lipped, judgmental type, who considered class and breeding to be the most important human qualities in existence. What she did not have by birth in those departments, she made up for by considering wealth to be a suitable substitute. Of course, that didn't include what was known as new money, which came with the brash and unpleasant overtones of allowing common folk to mix with people they really shouldn't be allowed anywhere near, other than in a servile capacity. Betty's plain and humble beginnings had been lost to the mists of time, and her husband's money, career and subsequent inheritance of property had elevated her. She had the skills to mimic the right voice and mannerisms to appear as if she'd been born to it. Her vicar father and schoolteacher mother would have been horrified if they could hear her now. But they had both been carried off by the Spanish flu after the Great War, and this had enabled Betty to adjust the tones of her posh voice up another notch to just marginally south of royalty. The Hardys' marriage had produced two children, George and Enid, and with the target being achieved so efficiently, husband and wife had enjoyed separate bedrooms ever since. Their affection for the last 19 years had been a peck on the cheek, which Joseph gave to Betty, and she tilted her head to receive, every morning at 8:30 a.m, before he took his place at the breakfast table. Their daughter Enid was a daft and hopeless type of girl, with an unfortunate set of features, which were on their own not awful, but together created something of a disaster. Plain, pointy and pale, with no redeeming personality, limp, listless and a bit lumpy was poor Enid. Her mother couldn't see quite how dreadful Enid's features amounted to, and this could be because of the horsey element, which everyone else noticed, but Betty probably thought of as a quality. Even her father rather despaired of ever finding a match for the poor girl, especially considering the lack of men around these days. And George Hardy, where is he? The final member of this branch of the Hardy family, the ones that live in the Grange, the inherited property left for the third son. George, the only son of the Brigadier, aged 23, with his fair hair and his freckled handsome face. George Hardy is lying in bed. He is dying. His friends from university are lying in mud, or lying in field hospitals without all of their limbs. They are being blown out of the sky. They are being shot to pieces. They are drowning with all hands in torpedoed ships. They are all dying too. But that will not make George's death less sad. George's best friend, William Selby, died last week. He's the fourth member of that family to die this year. George is lying in bed, and his heart is heavy. He's a poetry-loving, bird-watching artist. He loves watching his friends excel at cricket, even though he's hopeless at the game. He loves rowing with his friends in boats, and taking picnics, and listening while each takes a turn at reading out loud while the others lounge on a blanket beneath the oak tree near the river. He loves his dog, Aldous, an ugly collie with mismatched eyes, who adores him. Aldous lies at the bottom of his bed now and sighs his dog sigh. He understands more than the humans that George is not here for long, and his doggy heart is heavy too. George pats his head and murmurs, "It's all right, Aldo. It's going to be all right." Aldous understands that his owner is at peace with himself. George knows that the days of picnics and poetry, of rowing and pints of beer, are over. He is the wisest soul in the Hardy family. Brigadier Hardy and his wife Betty are eating breakfast. The peck on the cheek happened 10 minutes ago, and they filled their plates from the silver platters on the sideboard. Enid has taken her plate out of the dining room because the atmosphere is frightening her. Betty and Joseph have not spoken more than the barest minimum that politeness and pretence require of them for the last 2 weeks. Joseph will not send George to the sanatorium in Switzerland as Betty has begged him to do. He will not even go upstairs and visit his son. The argument rages with silent recrimination. Betty cannot even look at her husband, and thankfully the dining table is long and their separate territory is clearly defined by a large flower arrangement halfway down, which blocks their view of each other. Neither husband nor wife have the depth of character to win this. He will go today to the war room, and he will issue the orders that send hundreds of men to their deaths, as he has done every day for the duration of this glorious war. Men who are dying for their country with honour. At the end of all this, the battleground is a wilderness. The Grange is a house of silent pain in a marriage that gives no point or satisfaction to either side of this war. Enid moves to a distant county with her schoolmistress, and neither parent ever speaks to her or of her again. The morning peck on the cheek is no more. Husband and wife move around each other warily, with no eye contact, ever. At the end of all this, when the young men have all died, when the families who have lost everything are left to grieve, when the debris is cleared away and people try to get on with their lives, then Brigadier Joseph Hardy, retired, will sit in his club and remember his glory days, and he will tell anyone who asks that he lost his son in the war.